from KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, California voters will decide in November whether to legalize the recreational use of marijuana. And that could mean big changes in Humboldt, where roughly a quarter of the county's economy is marijuana-related. The quasi-legal industry funds everything from schools to fire trucks. And in this hour, Forum, we'll look at how the prospect of legalization would change Humboldt's culture and economy. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. California's Prop 64 on the November ballot would legalize recreational use of marijuana for adults 21 or older. And many inside and outside of Humboldt already see passage as a done deal. A green rush has hit the weed capital of the country as speculators or cultivators sprint to buy land in a county where some 20% of residents are already involved in some way with cannabis. The region, which is just as famous for its teeming redwoods, produces some 60% of the marijuana consumed in the U.S., which is estimated to bring $400 million or so into the Humboldt economy each year. In this, the first in a series of shows dedicated to Proposition 64, we'll explore the impact weed has had on the region economically, environmentally, and culturally, what changes lie ahead with legalization, and what just the prospect of legalization has already done to Humboldt. Joining me for the hour is Hezekiah Allen. He's Executive Director of the California Growers Association. Good morning, Hezekiah Allen.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Thanks also to Scott Greeson. He's Executive Director of Friends of the Eel River. Good morning, Scott Greeson.
Good morning.
And good morning to you, Hank Sims, editor of the Lost Coast Outpost. It's a Humboldt County news site. Good morning, Hank Sims.
Good morning, Mina.
And I want to start with you, Hank Sims, if I could. You know, much of the rush, of course, is being fueled by Proposition 64, but also the perception that the federal government won't strictly enforce laws against growing or selling marijuana anymore, and that Humboldt had passed a land use ordinance recently that, you know, outline sort of what is allowed in terms of growing and cultivating marijuana. So what is legal right now?
Well, as of now, commercial cultivation for the first time, as the Humboldt County Board of Supervisors passed their land use ordinance back at the beginning of this year, commercial cultivation of cannabis for medical purposes, medicinal purposes, is legal or becoming legal. It's still in transition a little bit, but people have applied for permits, and so that is for the first time is becoming, you know, sort of out of the shadows and into the light.
And how much, you know, space, how much acreage can these outdoor cultivation sites have? Are they fairly big? And
well, it depends on what you consider big, but there are certain tiers of cultivation level. I believe up to, I'm sure Hezekiah can correct me, but I believe up to 1 acre on the largest cultivation sites.
And are these, and are a lot of growers, you know, signing up to get this permit?
Yeah, quite a few. I mean, there have been people going down to our county planning office, which has developed a division specifically to deal with these kind of permit applications. They've been meeting with people. People have registered their operations and are, in the process of applying for permits, and some have been granted.
Hezekiah Allen, is this something that's popular among growers, or is there any nervousness about coming forward if they were initially in the shadows? Hezekiah Allen, are you there?
I am.
Sorry. Did you hear my question?
I did. And I was just beginning to answer there that, you know, of course, there's a whole suite of emotions that local cultivators are responding with. You know, there's a really historic policy reform taking place with cannabis right now. And while Prop 64 is certainly occupying a lot of the headlines, the really exciting part here is what you just mentioned. Humboldt has an ordinance for the first time, and that's built on a really historic legislative breakthrough last year. So there's a lot moving, and there's a lot of excitement in the growing community. But, you know, I'd say anxiety, fear, uncertainty, there's really a whole suite of mixed emotions that folks are reacting with.
And what are those emotions being driven by?
I think a lot of it's driven by uncertainty, and a lot of it's driven by the fact that policy decisions will have real world impacts on the ground. And so, you know, Hank mentioned earlier the 1 acre limit. That's true. That is Humboldt's guideline. The other thing is that's consistent with current state law. Prop 64 changes that consideration and opens the doorway to much larger cultivation operations. So a lot of the growers are looking around at this very unique industry. Prohibition kept businesses small and decentralized and hoping that the baby won't leave with the bathwater. Prohibition has failed, but small farms have not. In fact, small farms are very valuable. And keeping cannabis as part of that diversified small farm will require some careful policy decision making. And, you know, there's some real concerns that Prop 64 maybe wasn't as careful as it could have been in that regard.
So then when you say small farms, you know, what we have been hearing about or has gotten a lot of attention are much larger sort of illegal grows, right, that are sometimes hacked out of redwood forest land. And are, I mean, the growers you represent, are they mostly just small farms or?
You know, vast majority of the growers in our association, as well as the growers in the state, are currently operating at less than a quarter of an acre. From a traditional agricultural perspective, that's really a micro farm. The fact that cannabis is still commercially viable at such a micro scale is a really unique opportunity for California, particularly for rural California, which has been subject to so many years of boom and bust economics. This product is economically viable at a micro scale and with careful regulation and careful collaboration can be grown in some of the most sustainable and sensitive ways possible. And so, yeah, most of the growers in California are currently operating at a specialty or small scale. Those terms are defined in law as 1/8 of an acre or 1/4 of an acre. Some folks are growing up to an acre. That's considered a medium farm under state law. And the real question here is how, when, and quite frankly, if California will license large cannabis cultivation operations.
Well, Hank Sims, when I said Green Rush at first, who is the Green Rush? Well, where are they coming from?
There are people, I think first and foremost, it's people who are here and who have lived here and who have, you know, this is the second generation or third generation of people in the marijuana industry in the Emerald Triangle and Humboldt, Mendocino, and Trinity counties. But there are people coming from all over the state, from all over the country, from all over the world sometimes. You've got people, moving in from all over the world. So there's definitely all sorts.
And Scott Greeson with Friends of the Eel River, how do you feel about what's happening right now with this interest in Humboldt and this rush to Humboldt?
It's a tumultuous time and one that brings real peril for species that have been here for millions of years. And my major focus, my organization's major focus, is the health of our watersheds and the coho salmon, the steelhead trout, that live in those watersheds and that need cold, clean water all through the summer to survive and to make new salmon. So we have seen with the combination of this historic drought and the Green Rush an unprecedented set of impacts on our watersheds with water withdrawals and too much dirt going into the creek. That really threatens the future viability of those fish species. So, you know, we're looking at the coming of legalization, the coming of regulation, and at once hopeful that we're going to turn a corner and really achieve the kind of sustainability that Hezekiah is talking about, but also trying to be realistic about the fact that at this point, somewhere between the vast majority and nearly all of the growers in the Emerald Triangle are growing for the black market and are not coming in and becoming legal and getting regulated. And there remains, I think, a real question about what policy steps are available, are we willing to take, that are actually going to regulate, you know, the 90% of growers who aren't interested in becoming legal.
You know, it's interesting. I read that there are about, some 4,000 marijuana operations in the county. Is that right, Hank Sims?
Estimates vary, but yeah, when we looked at it, and it depends on how you define an operation. I mean, when we looked at it, we estimated some 3,300 parcels. So this is 3,300 plots of land that had cultivation operations on them. But it's difficult to judge.
And then about 40 applications so far for this land under this land use ordinance?
No, there have been more. There have been 200 and some applications filed to date.
So does that number make you optimistic, Scott Greeson, or?
Like I said, you know, and Hank's right. The estimates vary wildly, but, you know, we're looking at numbers that range from 4,000 to 10,000 operations in Humboldt County alone. The Regional Water Quality Board has an estimate of roughly 40,000 operations in its jurisdiction, which is basically from Sonoma County to the Oregon border. So it's a very, very large number. And here's the thing about the green rush. We are seeing a continued increase in the number of operations and in the scale and impact of those operations. And I don't dispute what Kaya said. It's true that you can grow weed in a really sustainable way. It doesn't need to be high impact. It doesn't need to be big. But the unsustainable land use that illegal pot, that lucrative high profit pot is driving is very, very hazardous for our watersheds and our long-term sustainability. And the political problem is that rural counties are desperate for development. They're desperate for growth and, you know, a kind of economic sustainability. And the regulatory agencies that we've charged with mitigating those impacts don't get to decide about land use. Mm-hmm. The best they can do is place some conditions on it. And we've really left those fundamental choices to the counties. And the counties are poorly positioned to resist a tide of land speculation.
Scott Greeson is Executive Director of Friends of the Eel River. We're also talking with Hezekiah Allen, Executive Director of the California Growers Association, and Hank Sims, Editor of the Lost Coast Outpost, a Humboldt County news site. We're also joined now by Fred Christman. He's a Research Associate at Humboldt State University's Anthropology Department. He's a Research Associate at Humboldt's Institute for Interdisciplinary Marijuana Research. Welcome to the program, Fred Christman.
Good morning.
And did I read right that when you first moved to Humboldt back in 2012 or so, that you didn't realize marijuana was such a big part of the county?
That's correct. I'm 62 years old, and I last used recreational drugs on a regular basis in college. And for the last 25 years, I've studied what now I call legal agribusiness industries. I focused on apples, oranges, and table grapes in the western United States and looked at the conditions of the workforce, which is overwhelmingly undocumented Mexicans from south of the border. And so when I moved up here and I found out that weed was being grown here and that it was probably the largest private industry, I assumed, based on 25 years of experience, that all the workers were undocumented Mexicans, just like other agricultural commodities that generate billions of dollars. And so for me, it was amazing to find out that is not apparently the case.
Right. They're called trimmigrants, right? And they're U.S. citizens. Can you tell us about them?
Well, first of all, as has been said previously by other commentators about how little we really know about this industry that we're supposedly about to legalize, there are widely varying estimates about how much of the workforce is local and resident to what I call the Emerald Triangle, the three counties that include Humboldt County, and how much of the workers come from outside the region on a seasonal basis and therefore are migrants. The important thing to understand is whatever the actual number of out-of-region workers there might be, the majority of those workers apparently are U.S. citizens, not people from Mexico or other parts of the world. The foreign component of the trimmigrant population.
And they're called this because they trim marijuana plants, correct?
I'm sorry.
And they're called trimmigrants because they trim marijuana plants, right? That's the labor that they provide?
Yeah, just like with the legal crops, although all the crops I've studied are labor-intensive generally, most of the labor required is for the harvest and post-harvest processing. And so what you get in all of these crops is at harvest time, typically in the fall, late summer, early fall, you get a high demand for workers to harvest and especially to process the commodity. In the case of trimming, to cut away all the extraneous parts of the marijuana plant and leave the prized flowers or buds.
And Hezekiah Allen, how much do these trimmigrants make, say, in a day?
So first and foremost, I just want to clear up the term trimmigrant.
Okay.
I think that Fred did a great job of providing some insight to it. Trimmigrant is a really, really prolific headline, but it fails to capture the reality that the cannabis industry creates thousands of good jobs in local communities. And so there certainly are stories, and there certainly is a significant segment of the workforce that is a more migrant workforce. But the honest truth is this is a very community-oriented industry, and a lot of these jobs are – you know, my mom, when I was very young, single mother, this was how she paid the bills, et cetera. So, you know, these workers are also paid very well in traditional agricultural terms. As we have more and more conversations with the Ag Labor Relations Board down here, we're coming to understand the Ag Labor Relations Act. It turns out that our wages are you know, it's almost fair to say off the charts for traditional ag labor. A good trimmer or a good helper, assistant through the harvest season can you know, make $400-$500 in a day during harvest season. And,
wow.
You know, of course, that will change as labor costs come online, workers comp, more of these expenses that haven't been a part of the business plan historically will become a part of the business plan. And so we are likely to see some wage depression through this transition.
Are growers concerned that that could reduce, you know, interest?
Oh, goodness, no.
Okay, so they're not worried about their workforce drying up?
No, I mean, I think these are good jobs. It's an exciting industry. It's a dynamic industry, especially if we manage to keep it sort of small business and entrepreneurial friendly. Trimming is oftentimes a first step into the industry. A lot of folks will go from trimmer to manager, and by year five, year six, they're actually owning and operating their own operation. And so, again, you know, coming back to the idea here that we need to really keep this industry and marketplace friendly to these small businesses. Small farms, they're just not the notorious labor abusers. They're not the notorious environmental abusers, you know, and I'm not going to in any way contradict anything that Scott said earlier. The unregulated cultivation is absolutely driving an environmental crisis. But the truth of the matter is going big isn't going to make those things better. And from a labor and an environmental perspective, there's a lot of promise in helping to regulate the current businesses rather than forcing the industry through some major consolidation.
But how do you keep those contained? You know, I mean, with all the interest and the fact that they're saying that there are large, you know, wealthy speculators coming in to cultivate.
Yeah, you know, it's really simple. A cap on cultivation. Gavin Newsom's Blue Ribbon Commission report found that it was appropriate and wise to limit the scale of cultivation in the state of California. The state legislature found it in an overwhelmingly bipartisan majority. They found it appropriate to limit the scale of cultivation that would be licensed and permit. The drafters of Prop 64 did not find the value in those specific provisions and, in fact, create a Type 5 unlimited cultivation license after just a few years of legal adult use cannabis being intact. And, you know, some of the proponents within the industry and certainly the industry is I would almost say bitterly divided on this subject. And they say, you know, it's no secret. There's no secret plan. There's a green rush. The green rush is here. Well, for me, a lifelong grower from Humboldt, you know, for the last 6 years, I've been working pretty hard and pretty closely with folks like Scott and in the resource agencies to actually contain the green rush, to get ahead of it. and make sure that our communities were not subject to another boom and bust economic cycle like with so many other industries. If we go big and blow the bottom out from this thing, there's going to be a race to the bottom. Worse practices are going to abound, and we're going to end up like a lot of other industries where we missed a real opportunity to do something good for the places we live and the communities that we love.
Well, Hezekiah Allen, you're not growing anymore. Is that correct?
That's true. I left the ranch.
To be able to head the California Growers Association. But where are they in terms of how they feel about legalization, the folks that you represent? Are they split? Are they pretty, you know?
Yeah, our membership could not be more split. You know, I studied political science. From an academic perspective, these results are fascinating. But from a tactical and operational perspective, I'm kind of at my wit's end. We did a survey of our 700 or so members. We got about 500 responses. 31% support Prop 64, 31% oppose Prop 64, and 38% just can't figure it out yet. So about as evenly divided as an organization could be, quite honestly.
And if you could just quickly bullet point, you know, why folks are for and why they're against.
You know, I at the risk of sounding like a broken record, I've already mentioned it a few times. This concept of whether or not there will be mega grows is a really pivotal question.
Right.
Should there be a limitation on the size of cultivation? Our membership feel pretty strongly that yes. If we keep it capped and we keep these farms small and decentralized, there will be a lot more opportunity for a lot more small business owners. There will be a lot more opportunity for existing businesses that are causing those existing impacts that you know many in the conservation are concerned about. This will provide the opportunity for those businesses to transition into a regulated marketplace that deals with the impacts they're having. So there's a lot of promise if we provide that opportunity and provide those pathways. But if we open the door to a few mega grows, you know, a lot of the states just going to continue in business as usual. And business as usual green rush isn't working for our watersheds and it's not working for our communities.
Well, Hank Sims, at the top, I mentioned that some 20% or so of the county is believed to be involved in some way in the cannabis industry. Besides being a grower or cultivator, what are some other ways that folks are involved?
Well, there are many, you know, just like in the green rush, as in the gold rush, there are many ancillary businesses. You know, there are tons and tons of gardens, stores, people in manufacturing, not only manufacturing tools and products for use in cultivation, but in manufacturing products, secondary products such as, you know, extracts and gums and drinks and stuff like that from edibles from the crops that are grown.
And we're talking with Hank Sims. He is the editor of the Lost Coast Outpost, a Humboldt County news site. Scott Greeson, executive director of Friends of the Eel River. And Hezekiah Allen, executive director of the California Growers Association. And Fred Christmas, a research associate at Humboldt State University's Anthropology Department. He's a research associate at Humboldt's Institute for Interdisciplinary Marijuana Research. We want you to join the conversation. What are your questions for how weed has played out in Humboldt economically, culturally, environmentally? We're talking about the changes that are already happening as voters prepare to decide in November whether to legalize recreational pot. You can call us at 866-733-6786. Again, that's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org, post them on our website, kqed.org/forum, or on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Mina Kim. Stay with us. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. We're taking a closer look at Humboldt County, which is often described as the weed capital of the country, as Californians prepare to vote on legalizing the recreational use of the plant in November. And we're talking with Hezekiah Allen with the California Growers Association, Scott Greeson with Friends of the Eel River, Hank Sims with the Lost Coast Outpost, a news site, and Fred Christmas with the Humboldt State University's Anthropology Department. Also on the line with us right now is William Hansel. He's the undersheriff for Humboldt County. Good morning, William Hansel.
Mina. Good morning, Mina.
Thanks for being here. And, you know, I just wanted to get a sense of how many, you know, grow busts do you guys do in any given year? And do you feel like you're having an impact on the ones that are illegal and causing the problems that particularly Scott Greeson is worried about?
Yes. You know, in Humboldt County, we do see the effect of what I think greed has played as a part of this whole marijuana issue. We have probably 10 to 12,000 outdoor grows right now. And with our five deputies that are dedicated to marijuana enforcement of cultivation, with them working full time, we generate probably 120, 125 search warrants a year to go after these illegal cultivators. So we are barely making a dent into the marijuana cultivation here in the county.
So then what's your view of legalization? Do you think it will help, your department get things under control, or do you see it as more problematic than that?
Well, I think our county was one of the first counties to instill a marijuana ordinance, a growing ordinance. And, you know, I think if we gauge the success of that ordinance based upon what the whole state will do, I think we're in trouble, because what we found is out of those 10 to 12,000 grows, we've had about 100. We have 100 people that are going through the permit process. There's been about 800 people that have registered their existing marijuana grows, but actually going through the process of applying for a permit and doing things totally legitimate, you have less than 100 growers that are actually doing this. So I see this as very, very problematic. I see as people don't want to come into compliance with the law. They still want to maintain their black market ties of marijuana and not go legitimate.
And in your experience, has the scope of these grows changed? Has the violence that's been associated with it? I mean, we've heard about situations where these illegal grows are armed, right? And that they're dangerous. That some might be backed by organized crime. There was a report where Humboldt County Sheriff Mike Downey noted that he was concerned about the bigger commercial ones that he believes are backed by organized crime.
Yeah, absolutely. I think organized crime is alive and well in Humboldt County. You know, when there's money to be made, they are here, and we see it. Violence is associated with organized crime and growing of marijuana. For those people that are not going legitimate, their only recourse, I believe, is not to have ties with the criminal justice system. So they have to regulate. They have to protect their illegal operation. And so I think it's the violence. We don't know about all the violent acts that occur in the county relating to marijuana. We get a little glimpse. We hear about the shootings. There are times when people come and they do call us and report home invasion robberies because of marijuana, or someone who's taken over a grow and robbed a grower at gunpoint. But we've also seen growers actually regulate and shoot their workers as well for various things. So,
like what?
Well, we had one a couple years ago in Neyland where a grower appeared to have been overextended, and instead of paying his migrant farm workers, he shot and killed one of them and shot at another, wounding them and sending this this person running for their life. And that's because this guy made it out of the grow. He was able to report what happened, and we were able to prosecute with the FBI this guy for murder that was associated with the marijuana grow.
Well, Sheriff Hansel, before I have to let you go, I just wanted to ask you how your office, what are the conversations your department is having as, Prop 64 goes before voters in November and the prospect of legalization? What are the key things that you feel like you need to address?
Well, we're very, very concerned about the social issues that we see as the fallout of legalization of marijuana. Right now in Humboldt County, we have a big transient and homeless population. We have a lot of issues with mental illness and mental health. We have a lot of issues with DUI and addiction issues and those street level things that we see. And I think we're going to see a lot more of that when or if Prop 64 passes. And
do you have the resources to deal with it, do you feel like?
We do not. Right now, we are overtaxed. We are overburdened with these issues because there's homelessness that impact every community in the county. It's not just a part of Eureka, which is the hub of Humboldt County. This is every small town sees homelessness and transients and mental illness. People walking through town struggling with addiction issues, and we don't have enough social services or people to turn to assist these individuals. And of course they always come back to it's a sheriff's office problem or it's law enforcement problem, but this is a much bigger issue. That I think alcohol and drugs has played on our society. And so, but we'll continue to answer the calls for service, but I believe that we are going to be really, really burdened if Prop 64 passes. And I think it's not just Humboldt County, it's going to be all over the state.
William Hansel is undersheriff for Humboldt County. Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you.
And we've got a lot of calls coming in. Let me read one comment from Dave, who says, isn't the best solution for the environmental issues to legalize and regulate as with any other crop? Scott Greeson, do you want to respond to that?
Sure. There's a couple points there. One, sure, it makes a lot of sense to legalize and regulate, but we need to legalize at a countrywide federal level for that to really have effect. As long as pot's illegal in Alabama and Chicago and New York, people in California are going to be selling into those markets. Second, we don't regulate agriculture very effectively at all. And as I mentioned, the wildlife and water agencies that we've charged with protecting our public trust resources in California's rivers really don't have the authority to shape the land use decisions that are really the fundamental question at hand here. And, you know, when you think about the big numbers that you just heard from the sheriff, when we're talking about 10,000 grows, roughly speaking, in Humboldt County alone, and a sheriff's office that can look at maybe a couple hundred of those grows as a criminal question every year, we're seeing a growth rate that's higher than the number of people who are actually getting, you know, effectively regulated by the law enforcement component there. They're just more happening every day than people can keep up with.
Yeah. Well, Mike in Tuolumne County, join us. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I've worked as a trimmer for the last probably 6-7 years, and I've traveled all over California. And I've definitely seen it grow and become more professionalized in a lot of ways, sort of similar to small, like, organic farms that people are bringing their products to farmers markets to. It is super, super labor intensive and has gone from, you know, a few guys sitting around outside a picnic table trimming to using a couple of processing machines, harvesting machines to trim the bud. So it can be a really great way to make some money and, get your own without having to take the risk of growing it yourself as well.
Are you concerned at all about your pay scale going down if marijuana is legalized here?
No, I'm not really, because I've kind of worked my way into, as one of your guests was mentioning how folks go from, you know, trimming to being a manager to owning a farm. That's, I'm kind of along that process right now where I run a crew and I get a set pay scale and I'm able to basically kind of pick and choose who I work for. I can bring product home and work at home, which is kind of nice for a stay-at-home dad to be able to make some extra cash.
Well,
so it can really be actually a good way to support your family across the board.
All right. Well, Mike, thanks for calling us. And again, that number to call if you'd like to join the conversation is 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. And you can also email your comments to forum@kqed.org, post them on Facebook, Twitter, or at kqed.org/forum. Rory writes, currently banks are not willing to work with cannabis growers because of the federal legal status of the drug, which was just reaffirmed. From talking to people in the marijuana industry, I know that a lot of people use sideline businesses as front operations in order to deposit cash. If Prop 64 passes, what would those large growers do, Hezekiah Allen?
You know, the unfortunate reality is that the banking challenge can't be solved at the state level, regardless of what the legal status of possession and consumption is here in California. It is going to take federal policy reform to provide relief for that. So, you know, this industry is very creative. Folks have used a lot of different strategies to get their income into the system, to pay their taxes. And of course, some folks haven't done that as well. But the reality is that creativity is going to persist. I think what Prop 64 will help us with is it, you know, as this reform continues with regulation in the legislature last year, land use ordinances at the local level this year, and adult use coming, if not this year, I'm 100% confident it'll be here soon. All of that reform at the state and local level will allow for a more honest dialogue between the industry, between growers like myself and like our members and the regulators. And I think we'll be able to push those solutions at the federal level more effectively when we enjoy a certain level of security and regulatory certainty here at home. So it's going to take some more work to get that done at the federal level, but we're building stronger partnerships to focus energy on that issue.
And let's go to a caller in Sonoma County who prefers not to give his or her name. Good morning.
Good morning. As is the tradition in our industry, right?
what's your comment or question?
I wanted to share my own personal experience and make a brief comment, if I may. I was actually raised in rural Mendocino County, which is an area that has had boom bust with salmon fishing, which my father was a fisherman before the prices went down, and we saw the come and go of the lumber industry as well. And in our family, we referred to marijuana by the name of the children's book. I'm not sure if you're familiar with is The Giving Tree. It's literally put food on our table and clothes on our back and funded the schools I went to, and I was able to trim when I came home from college, which also paid for. And then I moved into the industry afterwards. What I've seen in the area is it's despite the extensive good that this industry has, I think we're in a really pivotal and dangerous time for the industry. And this is my first time hearing about Hezekiah's project, but I couldn't agree with him more. I feel like if we can keep this money home and in the hands of the people who are from here, they care about the environment, and the people who choose to live up here make a lot of sacrifices to be up here, and will do their best to look after this environment. I've seen the destruction of the Eel River over the years of my childhood. You can't swim in the Eel River past, you know, end of July now, whereas that was our destination growing up. And so there's a lot of major concerns. Also, if we hand this industry over to big business, we're going to see a generation of young men and women and old people who are going to need massive job training, retraining, and have absolutely no income. So it's a scary and careful time, and keeping large organized crime and large corporate business, which I'm not sure if I see the difference between the two, out of the area is massive for our environment and for our community.
Well, I thank you for the call. And Scott Greeson, one of the things that I've been reading and hearing is that folks are hoping that the Central Valley will become more of a major growing area as opposed to Humboldt, and it will take some of the focus off of Humboldt, though Humboldt does have the reputation. And I was kind of surprised to find that really, you know, growing weed is not necessarily unique to Humboldt's topography as in terms of a successful outdoor grow.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the caller we just heard from and Hezekiah have really illuminated the complexity in social and cultural terms of these problems. But, you know, if you look at the industry that we've got in the Emerald Triangle, a lot of people are often surprised to learn that, for example, the soil on almost every grow is imported in plastic bags. What Humboldt and Mendocino counties offer is a great place to hide. It's not so much a great place to grow things other than trees, frankly. And if you, just on environmental terms purely, were to transfer a lot of our production to, for example, the thousands of acres that the Resniks have planted in pistachios and almonds in the Central Valley, I think there's a strong environmental argument to be made that there'd be a lower net impact on our watersheds and ecosystems if we took those unsustainable nut crops out of production and changed them to annual crops of pot that frankly, if we had a drought, we could stop growing. But that doesn't answer the social and cultural questions.
Right.
And, you know, those are really complicated problems. We are not going to shut down the weed industry in Humboldt and Mendocino counties with the drop of a hat or the snap of fingers. We've been trying to do that for generations, and it hasn't happened. It's a, you know, a tangled web. And, you know, I would love to say that there's an easy fix, but there really isn't one at this point.
And Hank Sims, it does feel like there is this battle sort of for the soul of Humboldt. Do you think that's going on? You know, I've heard and read from the times that I've been up there that, you know, there's sort of a creed, right, that you respect the people and you respect the land. Do you feel like that's getting lost?
It certainly is getting lost in some senses. I mean, the scale of the industrialization of the industry in the hills over the last 10 years, it's been really mind-boggling. And you see, you know, under Sheriff Hansel referred to it, and Scott, of course, has referred to it. You know, a lot of these operations have very serious environmental impacts, not only individually, but in aggregate. And I think that when you talk about the battle for the soul of Humboldt County, it's interesting, you know, that what Hezekiah is proposing, and I'm all for keeping, you know, as much business in Humboldt County as possible, but it has to be recognized that that happens sort of on the back of the consumer. The reason why the economically viable micro-scale farms that Hezekiah promotes can exist has historically been because the product has been illegal, because of prohibition.
Right.
There's no reason why marijuana should be that much more expensive than heirloom tomatoes. Probably a little bit more expensive, but not that much more. It's not to grow it well is one thing. To grow it at all and to make a consumable product is not that difficult. And, you know, I think if people, you know, people here are hoping that we can latch on to some sort of marijuana tourism industry or sort of, you know, an appellation that says, this is quality marijuana grown from Humboldt County. But I think that to sort of insist that that is the only marijuana that will be available is going to be a tough sell to people who, in the cities, frankly, who are the consumers of marijuana who have been paying, you know, outscale prices. If it were a free market, they would not have been paying as much as they pay now.
Fred Christmas of Humboldt State University. So if the price of Humboldt weed plummets under legalization, it will take down local businesses with it?
Yeah, I think that it will obviously harm the local economy, but it will harm a lot more than that. The marijuana industry, because of all the things that have been talked about by various excellent speakers that you've had on today and the commenters as well phoning in, has developed uniquely. It's the only multi-billion-dollar crop that I'm aware of in the United States that is not controlled by huge corporations. All the other crops are huge corporate industries, and they use armies of illegal immigrant workers from Mexico to do all the labor and live in these incredibly impoverished farm worker towns that you see all up and down the Central Valley, down in Ventura, LA, and especially San Diego County. And the question is, are we willing to make trade-offs to devastate the economy here, move the industry onto huge plantations? The Resniks that we referred to a minute ago are one of my case studies of one of the worst agribusiness enterprises that I've ever studied, and give all of that profit and that product to a few huge corporations and devastate all the families that are growing small, very micro scale here and employing their neighbors, their families, their friends, and to a very small extent, primarily other U.S. residents that come periodically to the region to make $20 to $30 an hour as compared to the average farm worker in legal crops that makes basically the minimum wage, about $7.50 to $8 an hour, gets poisoned with pesticides, has to run the gauntlet, has to be here illegally. So there are huge problems with converting this crop into just another agribusiness industry.
And again, that's Fred Chrisman of the Humboldt State University Anthropology Department. We're also joined by Hank Sims, the editor of Lost Coast Outpost, Scott Greeson, executive director of Friends of the Eel River, and Hezekiah Allen, head of the California Growers Association. A listener writes, I have a friend that travels from out of state as a seasonal trimmer. She's told stories that involve non-payment for work and living conditions that are less than ideal. These workers are limited to what legal action they can take. I hope Humboldt County is ready to deal with and look for solutions to these problems. And let's go next to Steve in Humboldt. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well, thanks.
Great. So I used to be a cannabis grower, and I find that the environmental issues are often pushed onto the cannabis industry. And I was wondering what your panelists had to say about the grape growers and viticulture and what role they have in decreasing the water out of the rivers and damaging watersheds. And secondarily, where are the scientists on these issues? You know, why isn't UC Berkeley publishing studies about how to grow cannabis sustainably? So I'll take them off the air.
Steve, thanks. Scott Greeson, do you want to take that?
Sure. You know, the reason coho salmon are in dire peril in the Russian River to the south of the Eel River that I speak for is the combination of urban and suburban development and the intensive development of a lot of the hinterland for grape crops, for wine. And, you know, it's basically a situation now where we're spending millions of dollars to keep salmon from going extinct that we have no hope of bringing back in any sustainable way. And in a lot of ways, my concern with the weed industry is that we're going to transition it to another wine industry, an economically overwhelming, unstoppable behemoth. And, you know, that's a real concern.
Well, let's go to Dylan in Vacaville. Hi, Dylan. Hi, Dylan. Are you there?
Yes.
Hi, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know if I joined late or I was just wondering why they haven't been talking about the positivity of legalizing it. Like, we can look to examples of Oregon and Colorado. Haven't they seen a dramatic increase in tax revenue from it, as well as a decrease of not only violent crimes, but also drug-related crimes?
Dylan, thank you for reminding us of that point. Hank Sims, do you want to, you know, give us a sense of the tax revenue? You know, that's the big argument for legalizing and the benefits that can provide.
Yeah, for sure. And I know that, you know, that local governmental officials are looking desperately for sources of revenue, especially considering that so many people live out in the hills in Humboldt. It's difficult to maintain roads, other types of services. Absolutely, there are a bunch of positives to it. And I think one, you know, the most positive would go to what Under Sheriff Hansel was speaking to, which is, you know, the sort of removal of organized crime and violence from the hills and from our industry. People, I'm definitely looking forward to that ending, I think.
Well, Dylan, thanks for bringing that up. And Nick in San Luis Obispo. Hi, Nick.
All right. Thanks for having me today. Great discussion. I'm just in the car listening to you guys. And I was really two questions here. I know we've been talking about outdoor production, but really there's a huge number of growers doing this indoor,
right,
which I think is a little bit more efficient in terms of production, uses less water. But also, I want to bring up the fact that Prop 64 would allow for the production of hemp. And what effects or impacts or reduction of impact to the environment it would have if hemp is used instead of cotton in the San Joaquin Valley? I think there's a huge, huge benefit to the environment to replace the unsustainable cotton production with hemp. So really two questions. Indoor production and the hemp production.
Hezekiah, thanks, Nick. Hezekiah Allen, do you want to quickly comment on that?
Sure. You know, indoor production is certainly, particularly hydroponic production indoors, can be significantly more water efficient. Trick is that hydroponics can be done outdoors as well, so you can actually gain those water efficiencies. And it's undeniable that the energy impact of indoor cultivation is off the charts. I mean, You know, there was a study in 2012 from UC Berkeley speaking to the research question earlier. Folks don't research in this a lot because most academic institutions have federal funding. That's still in jeopardy. Hopefully 2679 legislation this year would pass to solve that. But research from a professor out of UC Berkeley indicated as much as 8% of California's domestic energy is used for indoor cultivation. So that's a very significant footprint. Speaking briefly to the hemp issue and sort of the Central Valley issue, first and foremost, there actually is a unique climate to the hill country of California. It's not unique to the North Coast, but it is unique to the hill country. The basins and the bowls and the typical flatland don't cool off enough at night, and they tend to keep a little bit more humidity around. So growing flowered products for consumption in those flatlands and valley areas is going to be a lot more difficult. There is a climatologic benefit to being in the hills of Humboldt, in the hills of Nevada County, the hills of SLO, the hills of Santa Cruz. Hemp, however, grows fantastically well in those big flatland areas. Like Scott said, the annuals versus perennials, there are a lot of environmental benefits to growing a crop that cannot be planted in a drought year. You can't do that with pistachios or almonds. So there is a lot of benefit with hemp. Last point here to make on the pricing issue. Absolutely. The price has already collapsed in California. Over the last 15 years, we have seen more depression of price to the grower than either of the states that have legalized. The consumer is still paying the same price. There's something else in the marketplace going on.
And Hezekiah Allen is with the California Growers Association, Scott Greeson, Friends of the Eel River, Hank Sims, a journalist, Lost Coast Outpost, and Fred Chrisman with Humboldt State University. Thank you all for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
And thank you. Thank you. And thank you to our listeners for weighing in with your questions and comments. Forum is produced by Irene DeGucci, Tina Lauerberg, and Judy Campbell. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our interns are Maxine Schofer-Wolf, and our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.